Okay, continue translating today. First of all, though, I want to remind you tomorrow's the day in chapel that we're going to have the Greek students share some things. And how many of you anticipate being there and sharing maybe a few minutes? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. About 6 of you? Okay. That should be about right. And we may have a few graduate students there, too, if we have time just to share a little bit about the grad program. Even though we don't have anything major going next year, we want to try to stimulate some interest for future. So we'll just report to chapel as normal, and I'll talk to Lanny and let him know roughly how many we've got, and then we'll probably turn the lights on after about 10-15 minutes and be able to share, and then I'll have a few things to share afterwards. So I'll probably just make a few introductory comments, and as you share, just share your heart. We need to hear accurate representations of what's gone on, and don't be afraid to share some of the trials and so forth that go along with it as well, because we do want to give them an accurate picture. We want them to count the cost so that we don't get everybody excited and have them sign up and then drop out the first week, you know, and they find out what it's really, that there's really a workload. So be real accurate, and so we just want to accurately reflect that, but do share what it's done for you and what skill you, what position you feel you're in with regard to studies and so forth as a result of it. And if some of you are in the grad program also, you can share what a difference it makes to have those skills in your research and so forth as well. Okay, so we'll do that tomorrow. Yes, Glenn? A Sanskrit class? Yeah, that's what we need. They're probably valuable, I think. Yeah.
Can you tell us real quick the outline the rest of your in the class?
Well, we don't have most of the rest of the year. We've only got, 4 or 5 weeks left. We're going to be doing translating. That'll be the bulk of it. We're going to be having a quiz on diagramming, maybe a few odds and ends there. And that'll probably be the only other quiz we'll have, because then you have your paper. I don't want to load you up with a lot of things because you're going to be working on it. Well, I would anticipate within a couple weeks. We're going to get this other thing out of the way. We got that last principal parts quiz.
When's that? Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. Okay. And we'll have one quiz on diagramming, and then that'll be it as far as tests. But then, of course, about half your grade's going to be comprised of that paper. So, yeah. Well, we'll probably incorporate that. I may just have one translating quiz too. I kind of like to give them, but they're easier than other types of quizzes. Maybe that's why you want some more of those. But we'll probably want at least one of those. I just want to, I don't want to have a huge workload for you, because I know you're going to be working on the other thing. So. But most of it we're going to be translating. We're going to skip around now. We're going to, I think we'll go through John 16 and 17, and then we're going to start, going into epistles and book of Revelation a little bit. Just getting some samplings of as many different portions of New Testament scriptures we can, get a feeling for it. A lot of classes just go through John, and, it's good, it's edifying, but I want you to be prepared for other things as well. John's about the simplest Greek in the New Testament. So we're going to get into Hebrews, which is supposed to be the most difficult, and then everything in between. We've already dabbled in the epistles enough with the diagramming for you to realize that they're not simple subject verb, object sentences. It's considerably more complicated. But that's about the size of it for the rest of the semester. So in class, most of it will be translating, and dabbling all throughout the New Testament, trying to get a few of the whole thing. All right, and we're in John 16, verse 20, is that right? 21 next. Okay, we finished 20. And John, why don't you go ahead and start us off with verse 21.
Hey, Renee, we'll come to te lupten eke hoti auten e hora autis hotan de genese to paidion uketim mnemon nuo e tes thripseos diate karan hoti egene egenese anthropos eston kosmon.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Hold on, just translate whenever.
Whenever, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That means to give birth.
Okay. So, whenever the woman gives birth.
Mm-hmm. The pain is
she has sorrow.
Right.
Because her hour has come.
Right.
Okay. And whenever
it's another verb that means similar.
To be or is born.
Yeah, born would be better. It's got the two nous there.
Yeah.
So it's not from Ginnamai, it's from Ganao.
They're both real.
Yeah, they are very interesting. Yeah, easy
whenever,
to confuse.
So whenever the child is born, not yet.
This is to remember.
Not yet. Is she remembering the suffering?
Right, suffering, tribulation, affliction. Mm-hmm.
Because of through,
mm-hmm.
because of the joy.
Right. Dia would accuse it of here, so yeah, because of the joy.
And what is that?
Hoti, you probably want to translate this because again, also.
Okay. Because a man.
Or you could even translate it that, I suppose, because of joy that.
A man was born into the world.
Yes, because of the joy that a man was born in the world. Mm-hmm. Okay, or was generated into the world. Good. That's from Ginnao. Yes, tikte is from tikto. It's a verb, and that's a subjunctive form. Tikto is tau iota kappa tau omega. And it's to give birth. It'd be interesting to study the difference in the concept between that and Ginnao. Ganao seems to have more the idea of generating it, you know, bringing the being in tikto, maybe have dealing more with the mechanics of the process of birth. Any other questions there? See a lot of subjunctives in the New Testament, especially with these conditional things and hypothetical situations. Okay. Yes, questions?
It's interesting that it says a man is born.
Yes, right. Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely connected with that. Mm-hmm.
But does anthropos carry the idea of just man generically or man?
Man generically in this case. Anthropos is...
like a person.
Right. On there would be what you'd expect if it was
that's
a male.
What you find in Revelation
12 has, you know, arsen, I think, which is...
arsen.
Yeah. Which is an adjective form from the same thing. Right. And it's got that definite concept to it. But anthropos by itself is more generic. You know, it's mankind, more or less. Okay. Let me make sure this wasn't any major variance there. The differences look like it's pretty much the same. Yeah. Okay, verse 22. Oh, yeah, question.
I was going to mention one thing real quick. I found, especially the key that I translated is on account of. Because sometimes seems to land in the English language, it seems like a little bit of maybe a direct agent idea.
Oh, because?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got lots of ways of the word because in English is coming out lots of different ways in Greek. And I think the idea of on account of. It's kind of showing the grounds, the basis, and limitation. Remember, the accusative case has got the idea of limitation, and it's kind of got the idea. You know, if you keep the idea of through and keep the idea of limitation there, you kind of see the picture of the grounds of the cause and so forth. But it's not so much always a causation element. In other words, it's not necessarily a cause and effect relationship between it. When you say because, you usually got that kind of an idea. And it may not be an active agent, you know, that's doing something. It's something like joy is a state of heart and mind. So I think they give you on account of or because of. It's because of some particular thing. And I wouldn't be too picky about it, but just be a little bit careful so that you try to reflect the right sense. That's the main thing. Okay, any other observations? 22, Jim?
Thank you, man. And you therefore now, on the one hand, grieve. Again, on the other hand, you shall see me.
Okay, I shall see you, though.
Okay.
On the other hand, I shall see you.
And your heart shall rejoice.
Good.
And your joy, no one... shall take from you.
Right. No one shall take from you. Yeah. This RA is to lift up off, lift off you. No one's going to lift it up off away from you. It's quite a graphic picture. So we would say take away from you, yes, but the idea of picking it up off you and taking it away, you know.
Is that a future form?
Yes. It's got the accent. So notice the circumflex at the end. Yeah, it's a future form.
It's a variant on that, too. No, there's not in the UBS, there's no.
Oh, yes, over here in UBS there isn't, yeah.
RA is a variant without the iota in the first part.
Yeah, well, that'd be the difference between the present and the future then. See, it's, yeah, they give it present in the parsing guide here, too. So we have do have a variant and accent there.
Is
it IRAO? Yes, IRAO. Or, excuse me, IRO, just IRO. Alpha, Iota, Rho, Omega, I-Rho. So your difference is, this is a Rho stem, you know, it's one of those that you can't put a sigma on, so it's a liquid stem, you might call it. And so the future would be just the accent shift, and apparently there's division on that. So it's either no man will lift from you, or no man is lifting from you, no man is taking from you. And it's not going to really affect the theology, you have to take it in a future sense either way, from the context. In other words, no man is taking from you under those conditions and that situation. Is there any difference in the karesatai there? It looks like both of them have that. Okay. No variance on that. So you've got will rejoice there. Yeah, that's definitely a future. Your heart will rejoice. Enjoy. So that kind of sets your time value anyway, even if you take the other one as a present.
Which do you have?
Okay, Ekheta. Okay, we've got Ekheta. I've got Ekheta over here, too. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. It's Ekheta. Yeah, we've got Ekheta in both of them. So we've got present in both of them, unless there's another. It doesn't indicate a variant down here. Okay, yeah, that's what happened. Yeah, that's interesting. Exeter's got P66, but Alice and B are both on the other side, so. Okay. Verse 23 then, Eric.
And that day you will not ask me anything, not one thing. Verily, verily, I say to you, whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give you.
Okay, good. Yeah, on that day, you will not ask me anything, or you will ask me nothing. It's double negative there. Verily, verily, I say to you, if anything you should ask the Father, he will give it to you in my name, or in my name he will give it to you. Interesting, we have a word order variation here. Westcott and Hort has...
It's a green copy, I think, isn't it?
Let's see. They've got...
it's word order.
Yeah, just word order, it looks like here. There might be recopying in some of the manuscripts. But the ento onomatimu is at the end of the sentence in Westcott and Hort, and it's just before Dulce Humane in the other. There's just a slight word order variation. Looks like that's the only difference I can see right now.
Would that make a difference? In English, there's a word order, but in the Greek, how significant?
Probably not much, only slight emphasis difference.
He gives to you in my name, or ask him in my name, he gives to you.
Yeah, if you put in my name, he gives to you, perhaps a little bit more emphasis on in my name coming
well,
first.
The way we translate, when we read it, is if you ask the Father in my name, he gives to you. On the other hand, it's saying, if you ask the Father, he gives to you in my name.
Oh, okay. Well, there could be a difference there. In English, we may get a problem as to whether the prepositional phrase is adverbial or adjectival. And the Greek wouldn't really settle that either way. The word order wouldn't. Yeah, it floats, and you're going to have to go by context to decide that anyway. But in English, you know, it's true in English, because of the way of our intonation patterns, it may help decide which way we're going to take it. But the Greek word order isn't going to affect that.
Well, the proximity, though, would tend to favor ask in my
name. Yeah. It's either way, because it's immediately... Yeah, if you take it the way that Westcott or UBS has it, then ask the Father in my name, he will give it to you. That in my name is more likely to be taken as adverbial. On the other hand, over here, he will give it to you in my name. I suppose it'd be a little bit more debatable the way that Westcott and Hort has it with in my name at the end. Now you've got a little bit more ambiguity as to whether it's he will give it to you in my name or whether he will you will ask it in my name. So I suppose it'd be a little bit more ambiguous that way. But it wouldn't prove the point either way. Interesting. Now, P22, I don't know what that is. I don't think that's a real early one.
Third?
No, that is pretty early. Lots of interesting ones. P5, the ones I haven't seen though. Okay, we'll move on here. Verse 24.
I want to ask too, what's the difference on what translated asking before
erotaō
and
aiteō?
What's the difference in the words and the forms there?
Okay, erotaō and aiteō. One of them has to inquire about something, you know, asking information, and the other is emphasizing more petitioning the person. And I think the erotaō was more of inquiring, and the other one is asking, petitioning for something. So what you have here in verse 23, the beginning, the erotaō, you're not going to ask me any more questions. In other words, that's more of an inquiry for information. You will question me nothing. But the aiteō that you find later on, asking the Father, that's more a petition for, you know, in prayer. That's something, asking for something. So erotaō was more asking about something, and aiteō was more asking for something. So they make a distinction there between the two. In English, of course, they're just asking, then we use a preposition to make the distinction, but the verbs have different connotation. I think they both were brought in Getches, weren't they, in one chapter, they contrasted them. I think it was the chapter we had double accusatives or something. Both of them can take two accusatives, but one of them is more asking for something and the other one's asking about something. Should be in there somewhere. Okay. And who's up next? Tony? Verse 24? Mm-hmm.
Dios partí uc estésate uden ento onomati mu aitete kai
name sister, yeah.
Kinahe e kara umon e teple rumine.
Okay, a, yeah, a plus definitely Romani, many. Okay.
Until now, not having asked anything,
and yeah, you have not asked anything. My name is second person plural. So until right now, you have not asked anything.
In the name of me.
Yeah, in the name of me.
Have.
Mm-hmm.
And you will receive.
Right. Good.
That the joy of you may be filled.
Mm-hmm. May be filled or made full. Mm-hmm. Good. Ask. So you got ask. I tete is a imperative, and you will receive. So you got an interesting imperative plus future. So ask, and you will receive. Get a real interesting sequence there. In order that, yes.
Is a
perfect. Perfect participle. Yeah. That's a construction I wanted to draw your attention to. What we have here, and what is a here? What would you
subjunctive.
Subjunctive form of what?
A-me.
Yeah, of a me. So in order that, of course, you've got your hina clause, so that'll explain your subjunctive. In order that might be being made full, you know, your joy. So it's a. This isn't quite the same periphrastic construction that is emphasizing progressive aspect, but it's akin to it. It's using the verb ami plus the participle. And of course, a participle is an adjective, you know, basically it's a verbal adjective. So it can occupy positions of an adjective. And one of the positions an adjective can occupy is a predicate adjective, and that's what it would be here. And but it's got a verbal action. So that your joy might be, so you've got an equative verb there connecting joy and being made full. So that your joy may be having been made full. In other words, at the time that that happens, your joy will have already have been fulfilled and be abiding in that state. So how we translate, so that your joy might be having been made full or something like that. Or we could say your joy might be fulfilled.
Or it's been prepared for them.
What's that?
It's almost like it's been prepared and made full until, you know, so that when they get it, it's just right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ask and receive, you see, and at the time that you have received it, your joy will have been made full. So he's telling you to do that now in order that you will arrive at a state where your joy has been fulfilled. Okay, it's quite an interesting picture.
Arrive at
abiding
in a continuing state.
Right, yes. Amen. Any other questions there? It's really important to know what these different tenses and everything are, you know, because as you go through, you paint a far more graphic picture. And understanding the functions of these various tenses and so forth. Of course, in a given typical sentence, we've got a whole range of them. You've got subjunctives, you've got deponent verbs, you've got, you know, just a little bit of everything. So if you've never encountered some of these things, of course, you're always groping around in the dark. It's really good to have the experience, even though you may not recognize a form perfectly every time. Although I think recognition is a lot easier in Greek than it is in Hebrew, but still recognition isn't too much of a problem. Having to form the forms would be another thing. Or if you had to compose Greek, it'd be a little bit more difficult, a lot more difficult. Yes?
Yeah, we were talking about aiteo,
mm-hmm.
and relative to erotao.
Yes.
And it's interesting that in order they had never aiteo him anything.
Yes, so right.
They inquired of him a lot of times, and that doesn't come out in English at all.
Yeah. Yeah, in English you just have ask both times, and you may not realize that he's not really talking about them asking him for things in a sense of a prayer, petition, that type of thing. But they're inquiring, they're wanting information, they're always asking him questions, you know. But that's a good point. Some of those subtle things They just don't show up in English. If you might get them from English context sometimes, but you might not, too. And lots of times we can assume we're getting it from the context and we get the wrong thing, you know, as evidenced by the fact we look it up and we're surprised, oh, it was that verb, you know. Well, there goes my theory, you know. Okay. Shows you that English isn't always precise as we think it is. Okay. I don't know if you've ever had that happen to you, but we have it happen almost daily in the grad class. Okay, verse 25, who's next, Glenn?
Kauta in Pyro Nihai, Malale Kasumi, Erika Kaipora, Kote Ukete in Pyro Nihai, Malale Kasumi, Parasia, Peri Kukatros, Apangelo.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know what
parable means. I think the King James translates it parables, but I think it's a. I did a word study on this once, and I can't remember the deal. Yeah, proverbs. It's a thing told by the way. I think it's got you know, the idea of para in there, and I've forgotten the details of it. I did a word study on it, but it's got the idea of a story told, you know, something akin to what we think of as a parable. It's not the same word as parabole is also used in the New Testament. But it's a figure of speech type of thing.
Yeah, that's
thing.
Another definition I get back here. Figure speech,
yeah. I can't remember I wish I remembered. I did a whole word study on it for a sermon one time. But it's got the idea of a story being told for effect and so forth, and the figure of speech, figurative expression. Sometimes usually it even has a connotation of a dark expression, you know, something that's not quite clearly understood. So what do we want to say? For one word, it's kind of tough. Figure speech, I suppose. See, the safest.
These things I have spoken to you in figures of speech.
Mm-hmm.
The hour is coming that no longer I will speak in these figures of speech to you.
Mm-hmm.
But probably clearly or something.
Yes, like outspokenly, clearly, something like that.
Very, according or in order that,
remember peri, we get perimeter from it, into round.
Well,
it means a round, and in the sense of a conceptual thing would be concerning.
Concerning.
Or about. Concerning or about the Father.
I don't get the form here. So unless this is, is this a genitive absolute or something?
No, it's just a prepositional phrase.
Around the Father.
Yeah. In other words, I shall speak, it goes back to the speaking. I shall speak to you plainly about the Father.
Okay.
I shall speak to you concerning, plainly concerning the Father. And then make a pause there, and then you're. Well, let's see. Excuse me. Yeah, the apangelo, that's the verb that's going with it. Yeah, but concerning the Father, I shall report back to you plainly.
Oh,
no.
Well, what's the form of apangelo?
That,
is that a
announce from, yeah. It's announced from. Angel, yeah. We had anangelo, and this is apangelo.
With the circumflex over that, I don't know. Is that future?
That's future, yeah. That's just the future.
Well,
apangelo. Yeah.
So I will announce.
Yeah, they give report back here. I don't know what this full sense is, but this is apangelo. Somebody's got to take angelo and look at all the different combinations of it. That's not one of the ones you'd looked at, was it, Tony? No, you had mellow, wasn't it? Yeah.
Okay, so
apangelo.
That is,
outspoken, they give it.
Andrew.
Me.
But
Yes, it would be taken as an adverb here.
Okay, but clearly concerning the Father,
mm-hmm.
I will.
I think it's actually a noun, but it's functioning as an adverb here.
Yeah,
yeah, I think what it is, it's a dative noun, and it's functioning as an adverb. With outspokenness, you might say. The root, I'm not sure. This is a noun. They don't put it down here. But it should be,
paresia
with an alpha. Just a feminine noun, I would guess. Might double check it. But this just looks like a dative form, so taking this instrumental dative. So with great outspokenness, something like that. So you're probably going to find that listed as outspokenness or boldness.
Yeah, openness, frankly, plainly
agree. Okay.
Yeah, it's
exact tense. Right. So this should be a feminine noun, just like basileia or something like that. And having the...
In openness,
yeah. But in openness, concerning the Father, I shall report back to you. Announce back to you. Announce away. You know, the idea is announce away from something else, so it's kind of... He's getting a message back here, apparently, from some other source. That seems to be the idea. Okay, good. Any other questions there? Mostly vocabulary is the problem here. Structure is pretty simple. Okay, 26. Mark.
And a kine ke mera ento onomati mu aitesis kai u lego mi oti ego eroteso ton patera peri humon. In that day, you will ask in my name, and I do not say to you that I will ask the Father concerning you.
Right, concerning you. Good. I do not say to you that I will ask the Father concerning you. Okay. Yes, again, you've got aiteo, you know, in the name of me you will ask, and then he changes it to eroteso, I will not say to you that I will inquire the Father concerning you. And inquiring the Father concerning you would be asking about information again rather than petitioning. Of course, the peri humon also helps qualify that. Yes. Okay. This is quite interesting theologically, but we'll get into that right now. Verse 27, then. Any other questions grammatically here? Okay. I think what he's talking about, you know, and it's understandable. He's just talking about a different kind of mediatorship here. But verse 27, Dale.
Now, those are Opater. Dele, ime, poti, ime, ime, de, dele, kata, kai, de, du, kata, poti, ego, para, tu, tau, excel, phone.
Okay.
And the Father, is having affection for you.
Remember, you want to, autos, when it's used like this, it's got that intensive idea, the Father himself, perhaps. The Father himself, the very Father, the Father himself is having affection for you. Okay?
Because you have been having affection for me.
Right. There's your perfect form for that same verb from phileo. Okay?
And you have believed because God came out of.
Okay, yeah, that OT, you might translate it as that here. You believe that I came out beside God, or there's a variant on that between Tau and Patros. Westcott and Hort has Father there. Just varying between Father and God there. But you have believed that I came out from beside God. Okay. Any questions there? Kind of an interesting expression. I came out from para. You know, it's XL phone, para. He was para and he came out from that state. Kind of an interesting description. course, you know what Trinitarians do with that. That can have some connotations, not only from his birth and origin, but from his position of fellowship with God before his ministry. Seems to be quite a bit of that sense in the New Testament, where he has this rapport and fellowship and so forth, and then he comes out from that to face man and his world and the ministry that he has.
And one of the other variants is an
archer's tail. Yes, the two is here in brackets. Huh?
Translates it from the side of Father.
Well, Westcott and Hort has Father. Mm-hmm. He said from God. He was looking from UBS. I'm trying to look back and forth both of these. It's kind of hard to do. Keep your eyes. No. Now, I want to try to catch any differences. You don't get a chance to do this very often. So, but it's hard to keep your eyes, the prints different and everything, and try to find your place back and forth. Yeah, really? Then we really have fun. Yeah. Or get the one that's all caps, you know?
Oh, that's right.
There's one of those. What's the diglot? Concordant. Okay, that's what I'm thinking of. That's all you need.
That's kind of strange.
Yeah. That's more true to the unsealed. Yeah.
I noticed in the interview that Jesus used
to
fill it
here. Yes.
That's kind of surprising
because
it says love.
Really? There's I'm glad you brought that up because there's an interesting interplay between agapao and phileo. And, you know, on the first reading, I mean, the first order of comparison, you might say, we would certainly say agapao is a higher form of love in that it's a self-sacrificial love and so forth. And then phileo is more tender affection, and that can be seen in a lot of circumstances. However, there's something that's seen in the New Testament in a number of places where you expect agapao and it's phileo. And it seems to be talking about a very high degree of love and fellowship in the brethren. And it's very interesting that, you know, there's another sense in which when you take this on another level, the phileo is even a higher form of love than the agapao in a certain sense. Because of that fact that there comes to be, you see, you can love your brothers with agape love and be willing to die for your brethren and so forth, but you may not be willing to live in the same dorm with them, you know. you see what I'm saying? And so when you get into this kind of another realm, you know, you take it above the carnal realm and you get into the spiritual realm, which is the agape love brings you into that. But then once you're in that realm, God is expecting us to develop a phileo love as well. That's why the Church of Philadelphia, you see, is brotherly love. There's that rapport and that unity where we're being transformed and changed to actually have a tender affection for one another in addition to that self-sacrificial love. And I think that's coming out here too. There's an importance with this. On one level, of course, you know, when Peter is talking and saying, you know, I phileo thee instead of agapao, of course, you can see the reason why he's saying that, and he's got a certain kind of a natural love, but he hasn't arrived at that spiritual love. But once you get past that spiritual love, and then you start moving into another realm of phileo again, in a different order. Mm-hmm.
Is this phileo? I've heard other ministers, like over the radio, something
right,
that it's a higher form and everything. But are they taking it from a carnal standpoint? They're not carrying it all the way to the spiritual realm so much, are they?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, if they're saying phileo was a higher form of love without qualification, they might be. But most of the time I've been exposed, you know, most of the ones I've heard, you know, have taken agapao as the higher form of love, and rightly so, and from the sense that they're talking. If you're talking about mankind in carnality coming into a spiritual truth, then certainly agapao is the higher form of love. I mean, there's no question about that. It's see, phileo is a tender affection. It's usually dependent upon the nature of the object loved. And, you know, something's beautiful or something is worthy of love, you know, it's easy to love that. But the agapao is something that's independent of the worthiness of the object loved. And so it's certainly a higher form of love on the part of the person who's doing the loving. But I'm talking now about if you once you're in the realm of the Spirit now, once you experience that agapao, and you've come into that fellowship and that rapport, I mean, in that self-sacrificial love for your brethren and so forth, then God wants to transform our hearts and so forth so that we begin to see and appreciate the beauty in one another that's in Christ and then have that tender affection on a higher level. So in that sense, I might say, only in that qualified sense, that phileo would be a higher form, not because of the word itself, not because of the nature of the love itself, but because of the total experience that the person has had and the total experience of the body of Christ at that point. And that brings you into that Philadelphia church. Because God really does expect us to develop a tender affection for one another. And, you know, you can have self-sacrificial love for people and still not really care, you know, not really want to be around them that much. But God's trying to draw us together so we really want to be around one another. Yes?
But there's kind of a comparison here. The Father's level of us and the Jesus' level of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of there.
Yeah.
And it would have been, you know, the Father adopted us because we adopted him, you know.
Yeah.
It might have been a comparison if it would have been the other way. Possible.
Yeah, and there's, you know, God is appreciating our... There's a phileo there, too, this tender affection. That's kind of the point that they had come to with Jesus, too. They were, you know, it was going to be proven before too long that they didn't have the agape love for him. But they did have a tender affection for him, and God's responding to them on that basis at this point. And that's maybe all that you're seeing in this particular verse. But like I said, there's places in the New Testament when it talks about loving one another and so forth, that let your brotherly love and continue and so forth. And it's phileo. And there is really an emphasis upon moving into this position of tender affection for one another. And it's kind of a tacit assumption that it doesn't come automatically, you know, that you don't automatically have that tender affection. Mm-hmm.
There's a new book out now that John's reviewing called Exegetical Fallacies, and the guy took the very point that this interchange of these words,
mm-hmm.
the point is the words are synonymous.
Oh, yeah. That'll happen to some people, too. They'll say, well, in this context and that context, therefore they mean the same thing. And you start going that route and you have almost everything synonymous. You can just drop everything out of your language, you know. Because it's just a refusal to see what's going on, I think. And because they're trying to make everything the same, you know, they there's a kind of mentality. This happens with prepositions all the time, too. And we've seen it in the books, you know, just kind of leveling everything out and erasing a lot of the distinction that's really there. Perhaps a kind of a tacit assumption that English is the best language there is, you know, and we can't express those shades of meaning in English, and they ought not to be expressed.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, yeah, it's really true. It's really true. And the deal with inspiration gets involved here, too. Do they really believe that God said exactly what he meant and changes the expressions and so forth to express truth, or do they just think, well, it's just stylistic variations of the authors who got bored writing a certain way, you know? That's kind of what they're looking at. If they look at it that way and look at it just for stylistic variation, then you start seeing all this kind of stuff, well, everything's synonymous. And I just don't buy it.
Chris Ruckman would have us believe God had to wait until English was
fully developed. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah. That's really true. A lot of them will maintain that. But I feel like, you know, for going from English to Greek, you're moving up in your ability to express. At least in written form. You know, in English, we can express things with intonation and so forth sometimes, but you can't get intonation out of a book. And so Greek is far, far, you know, in my opinion, far more expressive. Okay. Well, so much for that. It's a little bit of a word study there, but I think I can see what he's saying. You know, he'll take an example where phileo looks like it's a higher form, and then another example where agape looks like it's a higher form. And if they see, they must be the same thing. They must not be one higher than the other, you know, and they're interchangeable. And I say, no, there's no way. Yes?
One quick question. Is phileo a tender affection, or is it just affection?
Well, it usually translated tender affection, but it's I think, you know, or just, you know, it's an affection. It's dealing with, you know, it's the root from which friend is derived, and it's got the idea of something, people appreciating one another, and you know, it's kind of a mutual thing where you're both receiving. Agape is more giving, it's more of a giving out type of love, but phileo was more reciprocal. And that's why the idea of affection is there, because they're appreciating something and being drawn to it and so forth. And I suppose the tenderness aspect may just be, you know, from context and that type of thing, in the situation that it's normally expressed. I don't know if that would make, you know, affection is the key idea. But usually affection is tender anyway, you know. I mean, usually you don't have affection for somebody and kick them around, you know. You know, be hard or not, aloof, you know. You just, you know, affection and aloofness just don't go together. So I think that's probably the reason. Okay. But that would be more subject matter for a word study. You could do a lot more refining on that. All right. Well, What verse did we leave off now after all of this? 28 next, okay. And Greg, I guess you're up. Okay.
I came from alongside the Father.
Mm-hmm.
And I have come and am now unto the world or in the world. Again, I am leaving the world and I am going towards the Father.
Yes, right. Yeah, I'm going toward the Father. And doesn't seem to be very variant on that one. Okay. Yeah, I'm always watching back and forth now here. There is a difference in the beginning of the verse. We have Westcott and Hort says ex elthon ek tu patros, and UBS says ex elthon para tu patros. So we have a difference between ek and para there. It's kind of interesting. So either out from beside the Father or out from out of the Father, you know, having a kind of a doubling of ek there. And let's see, I don't know what the. Okay, we've got para with P5, P22, Aleph, and A. And Ek, B's got some of Aleph and B are separated on it. They give a C rating here. Doesn't, you know, it's not going to make a gigantic difference theologically, but it may have a bearing on. I would say that Ek would be emphasizing more the birth and his origin, you know, from coming from God. Whereas para would emphasize more that fellowship and so forth. And coming into the world, of course, wouldn't necessarily mean his birth. It would be, could mean his ministry. There's many other places where that happens, where he comes into the world as far as this involvement. Or the para could even be understood as having come from beside God, not in the sense of having fellowship with him, but in the sense of that's the source of his origin, too. So there's a lot of possibilities. Question? Yes.
Is the language
from Lucian? No, it's from Erkamai, actually. It's the perfect form of Erkamai. So that's a real, that's what you call supletion to the nth degree. Yeah, it's the first person singular perfect active indicative of Erkamai. So that's probably in your, and we had that one in our principal parts way long time ago probably. Okay, any other questions? All right, verse 29. And Christ, your name. Okay.
And the disciple said to him, what is death?
It's kind of like hine in Hebrew. It's like behold. It just means see. It's, you know, it's an imperative from hora'o, I think. Let me double check that. Yeah, it's from hora'o. So idain, remember, was the infinitive form of hora'o. And this is idah. This is the imperative. And second aorist active imperative. So you would say behold or see.
Behold. Now, in, I should say, clear speaking?
Yes. And here we have the preposition in, you know, with that same thing. So it's a little bit more explicit here. But, yeah, now in outspokenness or clearness or clarity or something like that, you were speaking. Right. Now you're speaking clearly, you might say.
Okay. And not, you are speaking in parables?
Yeah, figures of speech or parable. Yeah, and you're not speaking. Well, let's see, nothing you are saying in figures of speech, I suppose you might say it, because this is accusative form here. Udemian, not one thing. So nothing you are saying in parables. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
It's interesting, though, that they use another word, verb,
lao,
and lego right there in the same little sentence. What is the difference here?
Well, I think Dave Barnett did a study on that between La Leo and Lego, and there are some, and he came up with some real good distinctions. So some passages it's not as easy to see the distinction, but some passages are pretty clear. La Leo seems to be more speaking of the actual words that are spoken with the tongue. You know, it's It's focusing more on the words that are spoken, whereas Legos is dealing with the meaning that's being expressed. In other words, sometimes if it's a direct quotation from something and you're emphasizing the word by word, you know, a thing that was spoken, then you use laleo. But if you're talking about, you know, speaking the gist of the message, then you'd use lego. So lego is kind of dealing with the information being transmitted. Laleo is dealing more with the actual act of speaking and the words that are coming forth. And the distinction may not seem to be that important, but in some instances it is. It's, if he says something, it may just be giving you the gist of what he said and not repeating the exact words that were spoken. But if it's laleo, you know, you're kind of focusing right down into the actual words that were spoken. That seemed to be the basic distinction that he came up with. And when I looked at the examples, it seemed to be pretty well established. Yes. I don't know if there are or not. I'm not sure if that was one example that he mentioned or not. Yeah, you might check with Dave on that. I think he still got the data on that. That would really be a good one, too. It was a very interesting distinction. And he had some sets of scriptures. I can't remember what they were now. I wish I could, but where it seemed to make a real clear distinction. And it may have been along those lines. It seemed like some of them had to do with prophecies and the wording of them and whether the thing was being expressed as the whole impact. You know, sometimes it's just a summary statement about what the prophecy said. Other times it may be an actual word-by-word recounting of what was said. Now, I'm not positive on that, but it seemed that it either was something that or something very similar to it where the distinction was made. Okay. Well, let's see. Verse 30. Right. Okay.
And now we know that you know all things, and you have not. What is Korean?
Means need. Yeah, you do not have need that.
You do not have need that.
Well, let's see. You are not. You do not have need in order that anyone should question you. That's the idea. You do not have need that anyone should question you.
And this, we believe that you have come from God.
Okay.
You came out from God.
Yes, in this we are believing that you have come out from God. Okay, this idea of you do not have need that anyone should question you, I think what they're trying to get at is, you know all things, we've got confidence in you, we shouldn't be questioning you in the sense of, you know, it's almost getting the sense of doubting. Even though it's erotabo here. It's questioning, it's not so much petitioning, of course, here, it's questioning. Asking questions, asking information. Okay. Yes. Erota, no, it's a subjunctive from hina there. Might question. So it should be a present subjunctive. I'll double check it here. Yes, third person singular, present active, indicative or subjunctive. This could be either indicative or subjunctive. Yeah, because of the ao contraction. Okay, so with the hina there, it's more likely to be subjunctive. Okay, well, we'll stop there and continue next time. For a little bit, we got a prayer meeting coming up, but I'll be there for the first few minutes.
Okay. I have a question about the verse that I've been working on that a little bit.
Okay, go ahead. I'll be there for a while and do some paperwork and things.
Just yesterday, we started presenting contrarian arguments.
Yeah,
and we got a good one. Well, don't give them to me because I got four of them, but I just presented one yesterday.
Apologetic.
I was.